answer. And then he shows up in person. Thanks, man.
Well, it's good to
see you.
It's good to be home. Good
to
see you.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing. You're going to have to enjoy it while it lasts, because if any inclination from between talking to you and Congressman Shimkus that when you go back after January 11th, that you might as well just plan on staying.
We know that. Early on, right after the election, our first conference after that, Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader, actually told the whole conference, he said, our schedule has now changed. We didn't know what we were going to do because we didn't know which president-elect we would be working with. And we almost had the schedule done for the case if we were going to have Hillary. As it is right now, we're going back to the drawing board. And they came back, and we have, for at least the first 100 days, we are only home for Saturday and Sunday. The question is, will they work us through Saturday and Sunday on most of those days?
Right.
Probably. So you fly home and do what you can, and but for the most part, you have to depend on your staff locally to handle everything here.
Congressman Shimkus told me in the neighborhood of 50 items in particular that had already been isolated for attention by the president-elect, and some of that because the clock is ticking. Now, the way I understand this, Congressman, is that once an executive order is put in, that it has kind of a lifespan before it becomes more set in concrete. And
that is,
I guess that's about 6 months?
It's about 6 months, and that is why it is that we were so aggressive to drop the last week, get past the CR, do the things we had to do and get out of town. So because the clock doesn't start when the new president comes in, the clock starts whenever the last Congress adjourned, signed, or died.
Oh,
so that's why it is that we got out a week early, because there's certain things, and one of those things is it's vitally important. Matter of fact, the news release was sent out by the speaker yesterday, basically telling the president once again he's never got it. The executive office does not write law.
Are you talking about the EPA streams regulations?
Yes, the EPA streams regulation. And let me
tell you. Signed last week?
It's signed last. It was finalized last week.
Okay.
Let me tell you how bad that is. You know, I want to protect the water. You want to protect the water. I want to protect the air. I want to do all of those things. The overreach of these particular rules, you know, I'm for safety rules, and I'm for making sure that we protect our environment to the best we possibly can. But this is overreaching the point that we have underground mines right now, and what they're saying is that even if you're underground, you can't be within so many thousand feet of the setback of a stream, okay? Even if we have strip mines now, the rule is you have to put the stream back to flow the exact same way that it is either as good or better for water flow and for the environment. This says you can't get near it. Well,
I've worked with enough guys that have been friends of mine that work in the coal mines that talk about we're just about this many feet below the river. We're running the pumps all night long to keep it out because the water coming in. And a lot of my safety friends in particular, they're near streams. And you go into southeastern Illinois, some of those mines are, that would shut it down. Yeah. What's interesting, Mike, is the interior director, I'm not sure I'm getting the title right, said this law will cost moderate job losses in the Midwest. Moderate.
That's not true. Steve Carter with Blackhawk and all the mines up there, he said that this rule, one rule, can be devastating to their operation. Now, understand, that's one of the few mines that's still working here in southern Illinois. You know, his mines are the ones that are still working. We've got to make sure that we get away from this overreach of these agencies, that we make wise decisions. And not only that, that these rules come into place not based on some person fulfilling an administration order, but actually fulfilling law.
And here's the interesting thing. The law says when these rules are made by the EPA that job losses must be taken into consideration and minimized.
But,
and that is the law, and it seems as though that portion of the law that allows them to sign these executive orders, the portion of it about job losses, has been largely ignored.
It has been ignored for 8 years, and it's got to stop. This is one of the things that Congress, we've decided as part of the abetterway.com, you know, the agenda that we were pushing. One of those things, and it doesn't matter whether it's Trump or Obama, Bush, whoever, since about Woodrow Wilson, the executive branch has been overstepping its bounds, sometimes by Congress giving that power away. One of the issues that we wanted to work on is to move forward, is to take that power back. Because we were set up originally that, you know, that the Congress would have that power of oversight, budget control, and law making. The executive office, unfortunately, has moved into a position, and it doesn't matter what it is. We need to make sure that power comes back to Congress.
All right, and let's look at this another way, because the new executive order, which takes advantage of a provision made in 1953 with this old law, right? And there's no provisions included in the 1953 law that allows for it to be rescinded. And that is President Obama yesterday signing a law that blocks the leasing of property for offshore oil and gas drilling in the Atlantic and Arctic. Right. And people say, this is permanent.
Well, one thing I've learned, whether it's the state of Illinois or whether it's the federal government, it's only permanent as long as the existing Congress allows it to be permanent. Unless it is a constitutional change set forth by the people, it is not permanent. There is no permanent. We have the power. Congress has the power to change. Now, the question is, it's tough to get it through the Senate. You know, and that's the thing that is always tough, and that's what a lot of people don't realize. When we say, hey, Congress is acting, well, it might be the House acts,
right.
And sometimes the Senate, because of the cloture rule, end up blocking because it requires 60 votes. To actually bring the bill up, not to vote on the bill in the first place, but bring it up.
Speaking of bills, one of our listeners has contacted me, and I spoke to your chief of staff about it last week. The Vietnam Helicopter Crew Memorial, which I understand, when your chief of staff tells me you're a sponsor.
I am. What everyone that serves in wars, there was some of those helicopter crews, and I've known many of those people over the years. They quite often flew into harm's way and were pretty big targets.
And with a life expectancy of like 3 minutes and 47 seconds.
That's correct.
I mean, I've read this statistic in numerous places, and as I said, I used to hunt with a friend of mine who was a helicopter crewman in Vietnam. His name was Dennis Griffith. Great guy. But when we went rabbit hunting, I didn't stand in front of him, because he pulled a trigger.
Yeah.
I mean, something sure moved. He shot it, and yeah, he was still pretty deeply conditioned. So when I went with Denny, I stood in the back.
Right, I understand that.
But it didn't make him not a great guy. I don't give you the wrong impression here. I don't give you the impression the guy was crazy. He just,
let me tell you,
he lived.
That there's some people that matter of fact, one of the guys that was a helicopter pilot in Vietnam, was a member of Congress. But before that, after he came home, he actually became the pilot of Marine One.
Oh, really? For the president?
For Jimmy Carter. And then when Ronald Reagan became president, he was introduced to the crews, and he met John Klein, and John Klein then became the guy who carried the football. And so we're losing him, a Marine. He chose not to run again. And so because of that, it's a very big loss to Congress, but it was a great honor to serve with him. But he's one of those pilots.
You know, while I'm thinking about this, so sponsor, and I actually, somebody texted me this morning and said, what is the current status of that bill?
It's going to be moved through fairly quickly.
Okay,
yeah.
Good. Great.
Yeah.
Glad to hear it. You just touched on something. You said the word Marine, and then you've got this new Marine that potentially here when we're talking about the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's pretty,
Mad Dog?
It is.
Sure.
He is Mad Dog Mattis. He is the stereotypical command brass.
That's why he's at the department. He will be head of Department of Defense.
And here's the thing. They say he's not been retired long enough, civilian control of the military.
We passed a law to correct that in the CR. So he is now, just for his case. And that there was a reason why that law was put in place. That was put in place so that...
That was post-World War II, if I remember
right. Oh, it was even before that.
Was it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It had a lot to do with the military officers that were even under George Washington. I mean, it was when you look back at it, there was a reason because you did not want the military to have total control. We have that.
I thought it was the nuclear weapons. Mm-mm. That nuclear weapon is when that put in that was to be in civilian control.
Yeah, it was before that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's interesting.
But what's really wild about interesting thing about Maddox is that he also has two other names, nicknames. One is Chaos, and that was what was given to him by his enemies because chaos was caused when he was on the field. And then the other one is he is called the Warrior Monk. In his home, he has a sleeping quarters only. He's not married. And he has 7,000 books on the history of every country in the world and their history of battle and what they do, and extremely wise man.
And you almost get a patent type of
It's very
vibe.
Close. A lot of people refer to that as Patton. Of course, it was funny because Dunford, the former commandant, who's now the head of the Joint Chief Staff,
right.
He was asked if he had any fear of the fact that Maddox would be DOD, and he smiled great big and said, "I have no fear at all of Maddox."
That's interesting, especially. And, you know, you look at his quotes, and he says, "You have nothing to fear as long as you want to be his friend."
There you go.
It's the point where you don't want to be his friend. It's weird that we
Well, he isn't the one I'd pick for Secretary of State, but he is the one that's very good for Department of Defense.
Kept thinking this was the date that Patton actually died. I think maybe it was actually yesterday. So, anyway, as we get started on this new Congress. Supposedly, according to a new survey, the one that will be seated in January will be the most diverse Congress ever. Now, a lot of people say this was a do-nothing Congress. Mm-hmm. According to my reports here, just some of the things that were done in this congressional session. Ended Common Core mandates, permanently banned taxes on internet access, imposed new sanctions on North Korea and Iran, strengthened the visa waiver program, ended 40-year ban on exporting crude oil, made government more open and transparent. That was changed to the FOIA Act. New laws on human trafficking and expanding services for victims. Thank you for that. And gave troops the biggest raise they've had in 6 years. This is just some of the items.
Some of them. And then my individual items that were key for that I worked on, making sure that our VA administrators are permanent. That we stopped the revolving door of the administrators at the VA. We also worked on a bill that they said they've been trying to get since 1972, which actually stops dumping at a faster rate if a country starts cheating on these, like China does with dumping steel.
Steel.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just steel. It's all areas because they can react quicker. And that wasn't an easy lift. A matter of fact, many people that were involved with the Ways and Means Committee were not really wanting to see that come to pass. They, for some reason, it was something that they had protected for quite some time, well, since 1972, and we were able to get it passed. So there was a lot of things we got accomplished. I think we'll see a whole lot more accomplished in the next one.
How hard will it be to accomplish things in a country that is so deeply polarized? I mean, when you see what happened in the Electoral College and the protests on Monday, not my president, this is why we have Electoral Colleges, is to stop Donald Trump from being president. When you see this nature of really not my president. Well, actually, yes, he is.
Yeah.
Obama was my president, and you would say the same thing. I know you well enough. I don't have to ask. We understand this, but a large group of people don't.
Well, let me give you an example of the first off. Quite often, the media wants to show you, and it stirs the public, the extreme on each side.
Yes,
whether it's on the right or on
it's
the left.
It's more spectacular, color moving pictures.
Sure is. It's a better. But the reality is that there's a whole bunch of us that can work together. I might not agree with you today on this issue. Conflict is inevitable. Combat is optional.
It's designed to be an inherently adversarial system,
when people tell me, whatever you do, don't compromise. Well, no, there's certain things I don't compromise. There's some moral issues that I hold to that everybody knows when they vote for me, I hold to those issues. But other things, you compromise. That's the way it works. That's the way it's always worked. Is my country headed exactly where I want it right now? No. But the thing is, we're not going to be able to pick up the ship and move it 180 degrees, but maybe we can start headed back in the right direction to do the right things, to put people back to work, to put people, to make sure that our education systems work, to make sure that our borders are secure, to make sure that we have a national defense that actually works, and that we deal with those who might be threatening our lifestyle, like ISIS. So these are the things we've got to focus on, and we can do that in a bipartisan manner.
You know what I find interesting about that, Mike, and the bipartisan, that you find areas to agree on in the areas and why you exist. Government has gone so far out of what government is for in this country. They tell you, land of the free, home of the brave. We'll try to do anything without a license or a permission from the government now. That the items you talked about was the core reason why you exist.
That's reassuring, isn't it? Here's the problem. One thing that does happen, and I wish we could force your members of Congress to do this a little more. The most quoted, least read document in the U.S. Congress and probably around the United States is the Constitution. It is our founding document. Based on that, we get the guidelines of the things we could, can, and should do.
A USA mission statement.
That's exactly what it is. It is exactly what it is. And unfortunately, because of our constituents, not in a bad way, they come to us and they say, fix this. When that fixing that might be a local issue, or fixing that might be a state issue. But unfortunately, we have many members of Congress feel it's their responsibility to reach into those local issues when it's not their responsibility. Their responsibility is to secure the border, provide a national defense, and to make sure that we have trade with nations and have relations with nations. And the only thing inside our borders that we're supposed to deal with is interstate commerce. Now, interstate commerce is vitally important. Why? Because we need to invest in our highways, our infrastructure, to make sure that the products that we produce can move from point A to point B.
And interstate system that is designed to carry military vehicles, and that's why the height of every bridge is designed so it can get a nuke underneath it.
Exactly.
There are all kinds of things that go on that, you know, you don't consider. But let's take a look at what you just said. Local interest. You know what I'm getting a lot of local interest on? It's two items. One, doesn't surprise me, Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, and it shouldn't surprise me, but it did. The number of people that have asked me, is Congress going to take care of Planned Parenthood? Let's get this off the books. We should not be funding Planned Parenthood. Yesterday, Texas state officials announced that they were going to plan to cut 3.1, all the funds from Planned Parenthood in the state. See, you said local, and then I remember Texas did this. But a lot of people are coming to me, Planned Parenthood, they're really thinking about this a lot.
Well, let me tell you, first on Planned Parenthood, let me tell you what. You know, four times last year, the House voted to defund Planned Parenthood. One time.
You mentioned them before, didn't you, earlier in the hour? Is that the Senate, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then, but actually we got it through the Senate and to the president's desk one time because we passed a budget. And when you pass a budget, you get what's known as reconciliation. It's a one-time item. You can move one item forward. We actually moved two items forward, without having to have the 60-vote rule. So it just took 50 votes in the Senate. Now, both these items went to President Obama's desk, and he vetoed them, which we knew he would. One was the defunding of Planned Parenthood. The other was defunding of Obamacare. Now, let me explain something to you on Obamacare, because you brought it up. We have said repeal and replace. Let me tell you what I believe the ideas are going to show us. Because repealing has to go through that area in the Senate of the 60 votes, what we do instead is we will replace with a system that is so cost efficient that we can repeal and will repeal the penalties, okay, that are associated with Obamacare. But what we do is we offer a free market system that costs you so much less that Obamacare collapses.
So that we don't have these straight line restrictions. So everybody in the country is in one market, and that gives the Walmart business method
more numbers. It is also will give the opportunity, I believe, with what we're putting together. Now, let me tell you that Tom Price is the best pick for HHS. There is no better, because whenever I would be on the stump talking to people, I'd say, I would like to say you, I'm an expert on this, but Tom Price is, not knowing that he was going to be picked for HHS.
Right.
So he has had the plan in place for 18 months on what we can do to allow the free market system to work. And so I'm looking forward to the change.
And I can tell you, here's the thing, and gosh, I hate it when we run out of time. The people are saying, what do I do now? My bill's due, and I can't afford this.
Right.
I literally talked to a man, 63 years of age, he's in the market, and still thinking, I'm going to just take the fine.
I wish, and the thing is, I can't advise them one way or another, except for the fact, and I wish I could tell you that government works faster than
that
it actually
does. We're
going
to have a January 23rd.
But I can't say that.
Right.
Here's what I know for a fact, and I know you're close for time here. We go in on the 3rd of January as the House. We instantly go to work, and we start passing things and working on getting the problems cured. So on the 20th, when the president-elect lifts his hand off the Bible and is no longer the president-elect, he can reach over and grab a pen and start signing things.
Sign that bill that was waiting on the president's
desk.
I thought it could only wait on the desk for X number of days.
Well, that's... We know what that rule is.
Yeah. All right.
That we can have the work done.
I was told,
and take the votes at the right time.
I was told that's literally what is going on in Washington. They've taken the dates when these laws affect different things and prioritize those.
And let me tell you, the advantage we have of having Paul Ryan as the speaker. Remember, Paul Ryan, is, by his own admission, is a wonk. That's somebody who knows all those rules. He loves those rules, and he studies them. And so it's great to know that he, as our leader, moves forward. He doesn't have to have a staffer do it. He says, he tells the staffer, hey, you know that there's a rule that says this.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, you need somebody like that.
You do.
You know? Do. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. And
good to have you in. And tell the wife I said, hey, too,
I will
would
do
you?
That.
Because there are a lot of things that are getting ready to happen. So rest up, get your sleep. It looks like this is going to be a bumpy ride, ladies and gentlemen, because there are a number of people out here do not want to see any level of success. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about a House controlled by the Republicans. Yeah. There are all these executive orders that have come down and getting rid of those. Do something about Obamacare. There's a great deal of anticipation because people put themselves out there this year. And we're told your candidate won't win. They went out and did it anyway. Mm-hmm. And so now they figure they've done their job. Now they're looking to you and the rest of Congress to do yours.
And we've got a responsibility, and we've got to move forward and get it done.
Congressman Mike Bost.
Thank you.